You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 281 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and joining me, frequent guest. I think you've achieved that, Jeff. This is Jeff Siegel of Peachtree Hoops and Step Back and all kinds of places. What's up, Jeff?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm good, man. It was an interesting weekend for the Hawks, and this year I'm not sure I'll be spending a lot of extra shows breaking down specific games, but I got a lot of feedback on the performances from Sunday and Monday, and two high-profile games. A lot of Hawks fans watched them, and they were obviously results that were more encouraging. So I want to talk a little bit about that, as well as Jahlil Okafor. I couldn't think of anybody else I'd rather do that with. So actually, let's start with Okafor. I think that's kind of interesting, and I didn't talk about it yesterday. I purposely saved it for today's podcast. For those of you unfamiliar with this, he is, of course, the former number three overall pick of the Sixers, who's sort of languishing in obscurity there in Philly, not really playing much at all. And David Aldridge, a very, very respected reporter from TNTNBA.com, reported Monday morning that, and I quote, league sources indicate that the Bulls and Hawks are the most likely destinations for Okafor, end quote. There were no specifics with that, but a lot of Hawks fans were really excited/terrified about this. So I guess we'll have to just tell them how they should feel about this, Jeff, because I'm sort of pro Okafor, but there are a lot of caveats with this. So where should we even start with this thing?
I mean, I think the biggest place to start with it is that if the most likely destination is either Chicago or Atlanta, then that means it might be through buyout or it might be through a trade. And if it's through a trade, then that's not so good because there's no point in giving up anything for a guy who's going to be unrestricted at the end of the year and can walk, but you can't offer him more than like $6.3 million. But if he gets bought out, then yeah, there's no reason not to sign him up for a minimum. Sign him up maybe for a non-guaranteed year next year and just see what you can get out of him.
Yeah, it's very, very weird. And I mean, I almost said unprecedented. It's not unprecedented. It's just this very weird spot where he's a guy with a lot of talent that has a lot of weaknesses and that have been magnified, and then situation's not great in Philly. There was some off-court stuff early on. The fit there is terrible with Joel Embiid. Like, Joel, you know, Okafor is a pure center. He's not going to play there at any point. That's pretty clear at this point. It would probably take two injuries for him to get real playing time in Philly. But, like, he's not a complete lost cause. You know, defensively, he's kind of brutal. That kind of, you know, a lot of Hawks fans have pointed out, like, look, the Hawks are really good at developing guys defensively. I'm like, yeah, that's true. But as you mentioned there, you know, trading for him has basically no upside. You're trading for a guy who you can't. I mean, you could re-sign him, but as you mentioned there, without getting super deep into the CBA, you can't. There's a cap on what you can pay him as the team that that already has his rights, etc. So you're actually at a disadvantage when it comes to signing him. If for some reason he played well with the Hawks and blew up a little bit, you'd actually be short-handed, and it would actually be more difficult for you to sign him. And also, beyond all of the logistical stuff, there really aren't any minutes for him in Atlanta. Like, he's a center, and the Hawks had Dwayne Dedman and John Collins, both of whom are better basketball players at this moment than Jahlil Okafor. Which is a weird statement to make because, you know, Collins is a rookie, number 19 overall pick. But I think if you polled people right now just to play a game today, you'd rather have John Collins than Jahlil Okafor. So it's a very weird spot, even though, I kind of like Okafor. I think he's an interesting flyer to take, and I'm kind of secretly hoping that he gets bought out and the Hawks could then make a run at him, because then you can get – there's some advantages you can sort of create for yourself, maybe sign him – as you mentioned there, with a multi-year deal potentially, and then if you wanted to trade Dwayne Dedman, which we talked about ad nauseum later on in the season, then you'd have some more minutes for him to play, et cetera, et cetera. But for now, you know, trading for him, I understand. You know, and by the way, Aldridge specifically did not mention how that would happen. He just said the Hawks and the Bulls were the likely destinations. He did not say anything about whether it be by trade or by buyout. If it's buyout, sign me up. If it's trade, no thanks, basically.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing with that as well is that they would have to give something up to bring him in on his salary, because they don't have the space just to take him into cap space. So they have to send out actual salary. And so that probably means Dedman, which opens up the playing time for Okafor. But, you know, again, you probably would rather, even on a team that's not trying to win right now, you'd still rather have Deadman on his contract than Okafor on his.
Oh, for sure. Like they could do like they could probably, you know, a Bellinelli for Okafor swap works if, you know, if the Sixers were interested in actually taking on Bellinelli. Because listen, you know, Philly's not a contender this year, but they're clearly trying to win. And they signed J.J. Redick to a huge 1-year contract. Like they're trying to win games, and Bellinelli could be a nice little upgrade for them off the bench potentially over the guys that they currently have. But I still like, there's not a logistical, it's not a perfect fit necessarily with Philly. I think they would probably do anything they could to just get rid of Okafor at this point in time. But it's a good point that you're making there. Like, you know, the Bulls actually have the space to take him in, whereas the Hawks don't. So they'd have to clear some space, or they have to send Philly something in return, which is complicated things even more. So all that to say, there are a number of angles on this thing, but I kind of like the idea of Okafor on the Hawks. I just don't like it as a trade, just because, it's just kind of weird. And I would like to see Bud work with him, though, because I guess, you know, before we get away from this, I do want to ask you just sort of about the player, because Okafor is divisive. Obviously, he at this point, no one is going to tell you that you know him being the number three overall pick was a good idea. But at the same time, like, is he redeemable in your mind? I know we haven't. I mean, it's not like we're watching him every single game here in Atlanta. But from what I can see, you know, the offensive skills are still intriguing. It's just sort of like he's a throwback player in a kind of a bad way.
Yeah, I mean, but he's really talented offensively, and if anybody can bring that sort of defensive side out of him, it's going to be a coaching staff like Bud's and a coaching staff in Atlanta that can bring that out of players. We saw that a little bit with Tim Hardaway Jr. Of course, that's a very different player. He's on the wing. They've always had a lot of luck with wings in terms of developing them defensively and offensively. Whereas big men, it's worked a little bit with Muscala. I think people are divided on whether he's a good defender or not, or even just like an above average defender versus, you know, a total train wreck. But I think Okafor, like if the only thing is because of the timing with this, if they were to bring him in and then just really throw him into Hawks University for 6 months and not play him at all and not play him until March, and then even if he was really, really good for a month, like nobody's going to convince themselves, yeah, let's give this guy $7 million. The Hawks would still have that little bit of wiggle room. They might have to pay a little bit more if he does play well in that last month of the season or something like that. But I think, you know, depending on what they gave up for him and what their sort of indications were on how much playing time he would get, I'm not sure that it would be the worst thing in the world to trade somebody like Bellinelli for him, or even a Deadman, a Deadman trade wouldn't be the end of the world, as long as Okafor's not coming in and immediately getting minutes and he's, you know, really going through the same process that we saw with Tim Hardaway Jr. with his first season.
Yeah, it's just so weird. The whole thing is so bizarre, but I don't know. I'm kind of rooting for Okafor. I hope he lands somewhere where it ends up working, but just a very weird spot. I know exactly why Hawks fans are asking, because it was obviously mentioned by a credible source, and he's a high-profile player. So, but you know, it's been going back a year with people been asking me about Jahlil Okafor as sort of a reclamation project in Atlanta. Now it makes even less sense because they declined his option without getting, again, too deep into that stuff. But, you know, it's worth talking about. And, I think we've pretty much covered it there when it comes to Okafor. Before I ask you, man, about the two games over the weekend, I do want to talk to people about the Draft app. You and I were talking about this actually before we started recording. It's a very, very cool thing. So fantasy basketball fans, listen up here. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite app, and that is Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play real live snake drafts with other people, just like you're in a season-long league. And here's how it works: it's just a draft that lasts for one night, and there's no management beyond that. Just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's absolutely it. There's no trades, there's no waiver wires, none of that stuff. Even if somebody gets hurt, they fix it for you, no problem at all. And drafts start every couple of minutes, so you can join in one immediately. And as the Locked On Network, we're really kind of pumping those out on Wednesdays. It's we're promoting that heavily, and people will be on there playing all day long for the Locked On Network. So check those things out on Wednesdays. Especially the best part about this, though, is that you can play for cold hard cash. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for absolutely everyone. Even if you are a novice, just want to play for a few pennies there, a few nickels, you can definitely do that. There's no salary cap, and play in a real live snake draft, and just how you like to play with your friends in your season long league. So come and join me on Draft today. Download the app anytime. Search Draft in your app store, enjoy the game in minutes, or play from your computer on draft.com. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into your draft when making your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code LOHawks. That's LOHawks. Once again, LOHawks. Play a real money game for free just by using that code LOHawks on your first deposit on Draft. All right, Jeff, let's get into some actual basketball on the Hawks side. Obviously, there's two games to hit on here without going, you know, super deep on either one of these things. You know, the Cleveland game is, you know, there's all kinds of caveats with how bad their defense is. We kind of saw that on display, but I thought the Hawks actually probably played, this can be weird to say, I thought the Hawks played better in the game that they lost on Monday against Boston. I was in the building for that one. I thought they actually played better there, especially when you factor in the caveats of second game and back-to-back, all that stuff. So what were your big takeaways from those two games? Because I think a lot of Hawks fans are actually starting to get a little bit excited about what they saw.
Yeah, I think people might look at these two and sort of think that, you know, maybe the team is starting to turn it around, starting to put something together. You know, we can probably temper that a little bit. Cleveland, of course, is just in complete disarray right now. And that was sort of a big game for Atlanta. You could see, you know, a lot of those guys, especially Schroeder, got up for that game. And really, you know, they like to try to take it to Cleveland, given how Cleveland has sort of treated the Hawks over the last few years. So I think that might have been part of it, is that Cleveland is just, you know, completely falling apart at this point, and Atlanta, you know, really got up for that. And then I think you're right that they did play better against Boston yesterday, or this is Monday, I think, if this podcast comes out on Wednesday. So I think they did play better against Boston. It's just, you know, wasn't quite enough, because Boston is, you know, a better team than Cleveland is right now, and they've got, you know, some very solid players, including Al Horford, of course, who we know quite well.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird to hear someone say out loud that Boston's better than Cleveland, but they are at the moment, for sure, because just of how bad Cleveland's defense is. You know, it's a sort of a weird isolation sample, because we're talking on Tuesday night right now, but even in the first half against the Bucks that I've been watching a little bit on NBA TV, the defense just looks terrible. I mean, this is not the Locked On Cavs, but the Locked On Cavs show. I would encourage you guys, if you like the Cavs, to check those guys out, but the defense is just atrocious, and the Hawks were able to take advantage. That's something that you have to at least put out there, and that, you know, the Hawks have to take advantage of the opportunity. I thought Dennis Schroeder was very good in that game, especially. He was able to kind of get wherever he wanted to go. But, you know, pretty encouraging set of games there. Especially, I don't know, there's a lot of stuff we can sort of tackle. I mean, there was the Luke Babbitt heroics from Sunday. There was Malcolm Delaney looking very, very good again off the ball on Monday. Actually, I want to ask you about that. You know, Malcolm has got a lot of heat, and justifiably so, but the last two games he's played, there was an injury in between, though. He's played a lot of shooting guard, basically, you know, playing either with Taylor or Schroeder, basically, exclusively in those games. A lot of that's roster-wise, but he's looked much, much better off the ball. Is that something that you might see continuing? I think a lot of that has to do with Bembry being out, kind of only having three wings, but Bud's been very, very loose with the ability to play two and even three point guards, so it's not like he doesn't trust that lineup, it seems.
Yeah, I think Delaney's, you know, maybe his better position is sort of as that combo guard, a sort of secondary primary ball handler in a way that you can just sort of, you know, he can run a quick pick and roll if he needs to, and he's, you know, you feel confident with the ball in his hands, you know, to some degree. Of course, this year has been, you know, a little bit of a struggle for him, but, you know, and he can knock down that shot that, you know, we keep hoping that eventually that he'll get back to where he was as a college player and where he was as a European player. But, you know, it just hasn't really come along yet for him in the NBA. I think, you know, it might be interesting to see, even when, you know, the Hawks get back to full health, give Delaney a bit more of a look at that sort of combo shooting guard position and see, you know, whether that might really, really help him to sort of be more of a catch and shoot guy, be more of a sort of catch and drive off of a closeout, rather than being the guy with the ball in his hands at all times.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, the Hawks don't have a perfect point guard to do that with, just because I think defensively you're pretty vulnerable playing him at shooting guard with Dennis Schroeder. Even, you know, Isaiah Taylor is a better defender than Dennis Schroeder is for the most part right now, but they're both not that big. You know, Taylor's a little bigger, I guess. But it's one of those things where I think, you know, you run into some defensive problems if that becomes a primary look for you. But, you know, without Bembry, that's probably been one of the better options, just because you don't have Bud clearly does not trust Tyler Dorsey just yet. So, and it's hard to blame him. He's a rookie, and probably, you know, second round rookies are even worse normally. So I can't necessarily blame Bud for not looking at Tyler Dorsey's direction. But it's a very small sample, but I was encouraged by that from Malcolm. Other guys I wanted to ask you about, one more is Dwayne Dedmon was excellent against the Celtics. Probably, you know, I almost said probably. It's definitely his best game as a Hawk. Even Mike Budenholzer kind of acknowledged that as well. What did you see from him in that game? And then what do you kind of think of him in general so far now that we've seen, you know, we've seen 10-plus games with Dwayne Dedmon. He's not going to blow you away individually at any point, but is he kind of what you expected him to be so far in his Hawks tenure?
I mean, other than the shooting, he's pretty much exactly what I expected him to be. And then, of course, you add the three-point shooting, and it's all of a sudden like, oh, okay, like this kid, you know, he's really solid. So I think he's been just fine, you know, just across the board, even though, like, you know, against the Celtics, he played a ton of minutes. Certain games he'll play, you know, in the low 20s, but he's pretty much right on track with being sort of a solid defensive player, nothing outstanding in terms of protecting the rim, in terms of doing, you know, a lot of the things that centers need to do defensively. He's a decent role man. He's got good hands, considering, you know, considering how little he played in San Antonio last year. I would have thought that he was sort of more of a, you know, sort of a bumbling big guy, but he's got some hands and he can move. And of course, now that he can, you know, hit that corner three and hit a lot of sort of pick and pop, pick and roll short jumpers, you know, a lot of that stuff is, you know, things that I wasn't seeing from him last year. Didn't think that he would be bringing to the table immediately this season. Maybe it's something that he would work on in practice and then bring in, you know, January, February-ish. But he, you know, right out the gate was shooting threes in preseason, and they, you know, they look really good. I mean, his jumper, you know, probably looks better than most of the guys on the team. His jumper definitely looks better than like Schroeder's does. The way Schroeder sort of spreads his feet and like throws 1 foot forward on his jump shot, which is just super weird. But Dwayne, you know, Dedmon's shot just looks really, really natural. Really, you know, like he's been doing it his whole life. So it's really, you know, I think that's the biggest surprise for me.
Yeah, that is actually pretty stunning. It's almost like it's become normal now, but in retrospect, I mean, it's wild. And I said this even early on when he was taken in preseason, and people were surprised. If you didn't know Dwayne Dedmon's track record, you just saw this guy in a gym, you would not think he was a non-shooter before this. Like, he looks like he can really shoot. It doesn't mean it's going to be sustainable necessarily, because right now I think he's, it's 39% from three. It's only 13 attempts, so that's obviously a super small sample, but it does look good, and his free throw percentage is up. He's been very efficient from the field as well. I just think the stroke looks good, which is something that you have to be encouraged by in a big way. Other than that, the other guy I wanted to ask you about was Taurean Prince, because people, I had actually two or three people after the game, or maybe even during the game on Monday, kind of express some, I don't know if disappointment's the right word, but just some skepticism on Taurean. I think people might have been expecting like some sort of full-fledged like breakout, because I think for me, if you look at his numbers, like it's not bad. I mean, Taurean for the year is shooting 44% from three, 44% from the field is not great, I guess, but averaging 13-5 on the year. It's not, you know, his PER is not great because of some of the peripheral stuff, but I think in general he's just been fine. So I don't think that maybe you disagree with me, but I think for me he's basically been what I thought he'd be, maybe a little bit worse defensively than I thought. But any reason to be disappointed about Taurean? I know it's a small sample, but I think people's expectations might be just the problem there.
Yeah, I think people were expecting him, and I think maybe you and I had a little bit to do with that. I mean, we definitely had a podcast either over the summer or right at the end of last year where we were talking him up like Kawhi Leonard, and that, you know, maybe we wanted to cool down a little bit on that, but he's hitting 44% of his threes, which is, you know, pretty nice, and that helps his sort of overall offensive efficiency. He's still not fantastic with the ball in his hands, really more of a sort of tertiary playmaker. Tertiary ball handler, not really somebody that you want to really go to in that sense, but he can drive off of closeouts. And if he's hitting the three at 40+%, people are going to, you know, opponents are really going to start closing out to him. You know, a lot of those, I think, you know, it seems like a lot of those are more open than you would on a regular 44% shooter. So, you know, we'll see when defenses start to catch up on the fact that Prince seems to be, you know, really improved from that area, and that'll help his sort of drive and kick game. And it'll help a lot of the rest of the offense sort of get going. Defensively, I think it's, you know, he's still just a work in progress, you know, just, you know, a few games into his second year. You know, he's taken, you know, some of the most difficult defensive assignments on the, you know, on the opposing wings. LeBron James, he started on LeBron, stuff like that. So I think he's been fine. It's nothing, you know, he's not anything spectacular on either end, but he's, you know, creeping his way to average on both ends, and that's, you know, that's what you want to see out of a second year player.
Yeah, we said a ton on the pod and elsewhere. I think other, you know, people that we follow on have also said the same thing. Just how it just seems weird to people I know, especially casual fans, to say that like a guy being average on both ends is this great thing, but it really is, especially at that position. Like all he has to be is average on both ends, and that is that's a starter for a long time. And you know, again, starters. Just saying somebody's a starter isn't, I guess, the most incredible praise to some people. But if you get that kind of two-way guy at number 12 in the draft, it's a huge win. And again, I think, if anything, I think he's been – I think I actually tweeted this the other day – is I think he's actually underrated offensively and overrated defensively right now when compared to – especially when the Hawks fans think of him. I think some of that's just what we probably thought coming into the year, because defensively he's been slightly worse than I thought he probably would have been at this point. But still, I mean, it's not like he's awful defensively. And offensively there have been some confident ball handling, some secondary stuff, as you kind of said there. So not that I've been like blown over by Taurean Prince. I think he's been just fine. I just don't think he's been bad by any stretch. I think he's been pretty solid. So
I think the shooting is the biggest thing. Is if the shooting keeps up, the defense will come around. Like, I'm just confident in the fact that he, you know, he plays with confidence, and that sort of translates to the defensive end with him, and will translate as we move forward. And I just think that'll turn eventually. I mean, maybe that's my sort of blind belief in the coaching staff, that they can just turn any wing into a solid defender, other than Marco Bellinelli, who, you know, he might be somewhat unsalvageable at that end. Yes. But I think Prince, I think, you know, they're really working with him, I would assume, to, you know, get his defense up to par. And, you know, if he becomes an average defender, and even if this 44% isn't real, but it's more like 38%, like that's the kind of player that they thought Kent Bazemore was going to be when he got $17 million. So that's what I think, that's really the sort of what they're hoping that Prince will become by the end of his rookie deal, somebody that they're perfectly happy to give $15, $17, $20 million to, you know, depending on where the cap is at that point. You know, I think that's where sort of his mid-tier expectation is going to be. If he falls short of that, then that's, you know, sort of disappointing from a development perspective. And then, of course, if he blows that out of the water, they're going to be perfectly happy to give him as much money as necessary, because, you know, that sort of 3-4 combo forward is, you know, immensely valuable, even if he's just like slightly above average on both ends.
Yeah, I've been happy to see Bud again. I mean, a lot of this is probably just by necessity, but I've been happy to see Bud go to him a little bit at the four. Something I've long wanted to see from Prince. So a lot of just little small encouraging things there from a second year player, and it's kind of all you can ask for at the time. So listen, it's been an encouraging couple of days for the Hawks, which is a very nice thing. They have 3 days off. We'll see how they look on Friday against the Pistons on the road. Pistons are playing well right now, so that's not even that was a game that probably looked a little bit. Probably a lot easier a couple of weeks ago than it does now. But still, you know, the Hawks are playing better basketball, and it gives them a little bit of optimism moving forward. All right, well, thanks, Jeff. I really appreciate you joining me, sir. As always, anything you want to get out there and plug for the people?
Just follow me on Twitter at JG Siegel. I'm putting out cap sheets. I'm putting out, you know, whatever I need to put out as things happen, like Eric Bledsoe getting traded this morning. And, you know, you can follow my work with Brad at Peachtree Hoops, or you can see everything about the other 29 teams at FanSided, The Step Back.
Yeah, and I would definitely encourage people to follow Jeff, especially in those breaking news situations. He's one of the best in the business at getting that stuff out there from a cat perspective, and that was a weird one. So you and I'll probably talk about that offline at this point. But anyway,
not something that the Locked On Hawks audience is super interested in.
Trades are interesting always, but I definitely
understand. And some people were like, "Yeah, they should send Dennis for Eric Bledsoe," but that might be a little bit not sure that Phoenix is as interested in that as Atlanta might have been.
Yes, please send me all your trade stuff, even if it's absurd. I'll tell you it's absurd, so I really appreciate anybody that wants to do that at the time. So, all right, man. Well, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it. As for everybody else, we will see you guys later on the week. Might take a day off here before we get into Friday, but I promise I will never just leave you guys for very long. I promise. Just a weird 3-day off stretch here for the Hawks. I think one of the rare ones all season. It's basically, I think there's only one or two on the schedule where they have 3 full days off in between games, aside from the All-Star break. So we're just kind of in a weird spot here, but I promise I'll be here for the podcast, and as always, stay tuned.